Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I'd like to present some results, some recent results joint with Kati Gyarmati and Imre Ruzsa on the Pünneker's inequality for different domains. And a brief overview of the talk is that we are going to study some superadditivity and submultiplicativity property of some set, and then we try to make a natural generalization of the submultiplicativity property, and that leads us to Pünneker-type results, Pünneker-type inequalities, and we will need a more general version of Pünneker inequality to prove a generalized submultiplicativity. So let's see how it goes. So basically the question we started off from is, suppose you are given a few sets of finite sets of integers, and you ask yourself, how does the cardinality of the full sum set, the n-fold sum set S, relate to the cardinalities of the n minus one fold sum set? So is there any relationship? And well, if all of the sets are equal, then Lev observed that the quantity ka minus 1 over k is increasing. So here the notation is ka means the k-fold sum set. It's not the same as the dilate, the k times dilate of A, right? So let's see what it means in the first few instances. So the cardinality of 2a is greater than 2 times a minus 1. The cardinality of 3a is greater than 3 over 2 times 2a minus 1 half. And of course, the first inequality can be extended easily to different summands. A plus b is greater than a plus b minus 1 in cardinalities. And we also know that this holds modulo prime p by the Cauchy-Davenport inequality. So then the question was whether similar generalizations hold for different summands and more than two summands. So you have do we have a plus b plus c cardinalities greater than, on the right hand side you have all the double cardinalities normalized by 2. Or do we have something modulo p in the form? Well, at least when the sets are equal, do we have something like 3a is greater than 3 over 2 times 2a? Now, Lev also noticed that the inequality 5 is true when the sets have the same diameter. The diameter is simply the largest element minus the smallest element. And concerning inequality 6, it turns out that it's not true. So if you are a modulo a prime and your set is very small, the set A is very small, then it's true, because basically you can rectify it and you can view your set as if it was a subset of the integers. But if the set is large, then there are counterexamples. Now it turns out this is the result by Gyarmati, Konyagin and Ruzsa from last year. But it turns out that the situation is much better with equation 5, inequality 5. So for an arbitrary number of summands, we do have that we have this, what we call the superadditivity property, that if you take the full sum set S, then the cardinality of that majorizes the sum of the cardinalities of the n minus one fold sum set. So the proof is an elementary combinatorics argument, which is somewhat tricky but not nothing very deep about it. So what you do is first of all you make a shift to make life easier for yourself. So you shift every A to start with the element 0. This can be done because the whole inequality is translation invariant. So then we can denote by AJ the largest element of capital AJ, And what you do is you make n minus 1 copies of the set. So maybe something like this, from 0 to a1 plus an, you make n minus 1 copies of this interval. And then you start marking certain elements. And well, I wrote down what you mark, but maybe it's easier if I also show here. So what you do is here you cut the interval in half, and this element is a1 up to an minus 1. And in here you mark the elements of 0 plus a1 plus an minus 1. And in the rest, you mark the elements of an minus 1 plus certain elements from the sum set a1 plus an minus 2 plus an, restricted, so you only take those elements which are larger than a1 plus an minus 2. So you only put certain elements of this set, and then you mark the elements, whatever falls in there, you color them red or whatever. And then in the second copy, you make a similar marking. You follow with the set 0 plus an minus 2 plus an for those elements which are smaller than a1 plus an minus 2. And maybe you can see that what happens is that here I included the elements of an n minus 1 fold subset which are larger than a certain value. And here I included those elements which have been left out before, those that are smaller than a certain value. And then you go on. And then you make the full marking. And what happens is that you count how many marked elements have you got. And all the marked elements belong to the set S, clearly, because you only add up elements from your set. So you count the marked elements, and obviously n minus 1 times s is larger than the number of marked elements, and the number of marked elements is exactly because of this property that certain part of this sum set fell here, and the rest of it fell here. So what happens is that you exactly get that the number of marked elements is the sum of n minus 1 fold subset minus 1. The minus 1 comes from the last marking. Is, well, there is an obvious one element loss at the last marking. So that actually proves the super additivity. Now, the next question we turned to was whether we can give an upper bound on S in terms of SI. So we already see that we have a lower bound in terms of the superadditivity property. Do we have an upper bound as well? So we start with a very useful projection lemma, which is not new, but it's interesting in itself. So you have a Cartesian product and some body in it, and you consider the n minus one dimensional projections onto the hyperplanes, then the size of the body can be estimated by the size of the projections. Right? So this is a fairly straightforward induction on the dimension D, and this is not new. In fact, it's a theorem from 1949 of Loomis Whitney, is that for any body K in the D-dimensional Euclidean space, you get the measure of K to the power of d minus 1 is less than the product of the d minus 1 dimensional projections. And there is, let me mention here that there is an even stronger, very nice theorem of Bolobash and Thomasson. It's called the BTBT theorem, the box theorem of Bolobash and Thomasson. It's BTBT, and it says that the Loomis-Whitney can be generalized very strongly. So, namely, you take any body K, and then there exists a rectangular box such that whichever projection, so you select some of the coordinate axes, not necessarily a D minus one dimensional hyperplane, but any subselection, and you make a projection onto that subspace, then the projection of your box will have smaller area, D minus K dimensional area, than your original body. So it's a very nice generalization. This we will not need, but I thought it's a nice result, so I advertise it. So with the help of the projection lemma, we can prove the submultiplicativity property. So the statement is that if you have the full sum set and the n minus one fold sum set, then the cardinality is less than the geometric mean, so to speak. Well, it's not exactly, because with the right normalization in the exponent. Right? Yes, I'm afraid so. I knew it would happen, because in the paper it's always k, but I decided to switch it to n, and I was trying to make sure that every time I change k to n, but I knew that at least one occasion, but that there might be other occasions. So keep your eyes open. So the outline of the proof is. Basically, we only need the projection lemma in a clever way. So you list out the elements of AJ in some order, say in increasing order, it doesn't matter. And then for each element of the sum set S, there might be, so here is a decomposition. So S is in the sum set, so obviously it decomposes as some kind of a sum. It might decompose in several different ways. But we can choose the minimal decomposition, meaning that the finite sequence of indexes is minimal in a lexicographical order, and in this way we can define a function f which goes from the sum set S to the Cartesian product, in that for an element S, you simply FS will be the element in the Cartesian product which corresponds to the minimal, lexicographically minimal decomposition. And then you apply the projection lemma to the image of your sum set, and basically, well, I didn't write up the details, but basically that's it, and you get the submultiplicativity property. So at this point, we see that there is a superadditivity property and submultiplicativity property of the cardinalities of some sets. Now, the next question we considered is what if we restrict the addition of elements to a prescribed graph G? So that means that suppose we don't want to add all the possible elements, but you prescribe a graph G, and on the left-hand side you add elements along the triangles of the graph, and on the right-hand side you add elements along the edges of G. Now, is it still true that we have some kind of submultiplicativity? It turns out that there are very easy counterexamples, so that was not a very fruitful way to progress. But there was a special case, a special instance in which the submultiplicativity remained true. Namely, if you have three sets, and the notation is slightly confusing, because S used to denote the sum set, and now it denotes an arbitrary subset of B1 plus B2, then we do have S plus A squared majorized by S cardinality times A plus B1 and A plus B2. But you can see that this is a slightly more general form of the previous submultiplicativity property, because if you take S equals B1 plus B2, then you get exactly back what we had before. So the proof goes via a Pluneke type inequality. So before going to the proof, let's see what a Pluneke inequality is and how it can be used. So let me summarize some Pluneke type inequalities. The simplest case simply means that you have information, you have a set A and B, and you have information on how much it grows. So the set A has a certain size M. You have some information of how large compared to M the set A plus IB is. I is an integer. And then you can select certain elements of A so that the growth of X plus KB is controlled. So X plus KB is less than alpha times alpha to the K over I times X. So basically you have some information of on A plus B or A plus 2B or whatever, and you can then select some elements of A such that X plus 100B is still controlled. A more general form allows us to have different sets B1 dot 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 BH. What happens is if you have information on all of them, so A, the set A has some cardinality M. You wanna have information on all of the A plus B I. The cardinality of those. And if you do have information, then you can select a non-empty subset X of A such that you have a good control over the cardinality of X plus B1 BH. And sometimes it is useful to know how large the set X can be. Obviously, up to now, we only had X non-empty. It might be just one element or two. Sometimes you want to know that X is not only non-empty but large, a certain percentage of your original set. So what happens is that it's not very difficult to deduce that that you can have such a result. So for any value t, which is less than m, you can so it's a prescribed value. You can select a set X such that you still have control over. I'm not sure if the notation is clear here. Oh yeah, B1 plus dot 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 BH is denoted by B. So you want to have control over the full sum set X plus B, and you still have control. Obviously, it's not as good as when you allow X to be small. So when you want to have X as a large subset, then you lose a bit of your control. So using this, we can now go back and prove the restricted submultiplicativity. So we want to prove that S plus A squared is less than the cardinality of S times A plus B1 and A plus B2. So what we do is we will use this Pluneke result. Okay, the notation is that A has M elements and the product of A plus B1 and A plus B2 is S. Now what happens is if the prescribed set S is small, then everything is trivial. You just write out and you get exactly what you need. When S is large, then we use Pluneke. How do we use Pluneke? We specify a value T. And we want to find that by the Pluneke result, we can find a set X, a subset of A, such that X has cardinality larger than T, and we have control over S plus X. Because obviously S plus X is S was a subset of B1 plus B2. So S plus S S plus X is obviously less than if you take the full summation B1 plus B2 plus X. And this is small by Pluneke, and in the next line you just apply a trivial estimate that the summation of two sets is less than the product of the cardinalities, and you add them up, you do a bit of algebra, and what comes out is very nearly what we need. So if you look at the first line, what we want to prove is that S plus A squared is less than S times A plus B1, A plus B2. What we can prove here is nearly the same thing, except that there is a factor 2 in the last line. Nevertheless, it's a standard technique to get rid of factors like that. The standard technique is the following. It's an exponentiation technique. So you consider, instead of your original sets A, B1, and B2, you consider new sets A prime, B1 prime, and B2 prime, which is the same as the direct product of your original sets, and S prime is S to the K. And then you apply the result in the new group, in the direct product, and then you deduce that basically everything gets exponentiated. So then you can go back to your original group with the inequality S plus A is less than 2 to the 1 over K times what you need. So in the limit when K goes to infinity, you do get rid of that factor which you don't want. So the next question, obviously, we considered it. This was a proof for three summands. Is it true that you can have arbitrary many summands? So you have a set A, any number of sets B1 up to BK, and some subset S. Is it true that the restricted submultiplicativity holds still? And obviously you can try to follow the proof, the steps of the proof for three sets, and you bump into the difficulty that you will need a more general form of Pluneke's inequality. So basically what you will need is that up to now we had a form which said that if you have information on A plus B1, A plus B2, A plus B3, information on the cardinalities of this, then you can conclude an information, a control, you can select a set X such that you have control over X plus B1 dot 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 BK. Now, what if you have, instead, you don't have information on A plus B1 and A plus B2, but rather you have information on larger, so you select. So let's denote by bi. So you select an index set I, and you have then you put bi equals the summation of bi I in I. And then you wanna. And what if you know any information about this these subsets? Can you then conclude that there exists a set X such that X plus the full sum set is still controlled? The theorem says that you can. So basically, you can think of it as a generalized Pluneke in a way that in the original Pluneke you had control, well, you had information on just adding one subset bi. And from that, you concluded the existence of a set X such that you had control over the full sum set. Instead of that, what we want now is that we don't have information directly these, but we only have information something like BI1 plus BI2 plus BIL. And this we have for all selections of I1 up to IL. You have information on those, and you still want to select an X such that you have control over the size of the full sum set. So this you can call an LK pluneke. The original you can call the 1K pluneke. Because you had information of additions of one set BI, and here you have information on addition of L tuples of BI, and you wanna control the size of the sum set. And it turns out that this is actually true. And the outline is that first we prove it for k equals L plus 1. So when you have information on addition of almost every set, just one missing, and you have information on that, you can conclude then an inequality of the desired type, that the full sum set is less than some beta times x, and there is a constant c depending on k, but we don't really bother about that constant, because with the method of exponentiation we can get rid of it anyway at the end. So I'm not sure how much into this detail I want to go. What happens is that this case when k equals L plus 1, this can be done by a reduction argument to the original Pluneke result. The reduction goes by defining a new group G prime, which is the old group G, direct product with different cyclic groups, and then in that new group we define new sets BI prime and B prime and A. A prime is this abusive notation, is still denoted by A, and then we prove an inequality in the new group, which enables us to use the original result of Pluneke in that group. And so you apply Pluneke in the new group, and you conclude that, well, you conclude exactly what you then go back to the original group, and you conclude exactly what you need. There is a note in the middle of the slide. There is a note here that we use that k equals L plus 1 so that the size, that the new group is defined as the old group direct product with cyclic groups. The size of the cyclic group is determined as ni equals alpha I times q, where q is a large number. Now, to be able to do that, we do need that k equals L plus 1. Otherwise, we cannot define the ni. So this was the first case, and then what you do is, once again, we need that we can find a set X which is not only non-empty but large. So we extend this result still in the case k equals L plus 1, so that you want to have a large percentage of the elements in your set X. So X will contain 1 minus epsilon times m elements, and still satisfy a bound which looks very much like the original bound, except that there is a constant now depending on k and epsilon. And then the general case can be done by an induction on. So you have now the case from L to L plus 1, and if you want to have a result like L to L plus 3, then you do it by induction. Well, L to L plus D, you do an induction on D. And once again, the problem is that you will carry with you a constant which now depends on epsilon, K, and also L and K. So as you do the induction, obviously how many steps you do in the induction, that will also come into your constant. But nevertheless, you can finally remove the whole constant with the methods of exponentiation, and you get exactly the statement of the theorem. And an application of this generalized Kronecker result is exactly where we started from, is that the generalized submultiplicativity. So you have, we answered the question that we had before. You have a set A and any number of sets B1 up to BK, then and an arbitrary subset of the summation B1 to BK, and it's still in the question. Is it true that it is true that the inequality holds? And the proof is the same as the same steps as it was done for three sets. It just uses the generalized Kronecker, and it's a bit more technical. So let me conclude by some follow-ups and open problems. So Imre Ruzsa gave a talk on it at different places, and then Bolobash and Ballister proved a slightly more general form of our result, namely that you take a uniform K cover of the set. It should be 1 up to n, not 0 up to n. So you take a uniform K cover, which means that every element is covered K times. And then the sum set to the power of K, you have a more general submultiplicativity property. You have the sum set to the power of K is majorized by the product of your restricted sum set. So it's the same thing if a uniform K cover, if you take the uniform K cover that we had, what did we have? Well, we selected every element except for one, and each possible n minus one set. It will obviously be an n minus one cover. And the same thing holds for the superadditivity property. So K times the size of the sum set is larger than the summation of the sum set included in the uniform K cover. There's another interesting thing I want to mention, is that the projection theorem is actually equivalent to an entropy inequality. So remember that the projection theorem said that you have a body, and then the volume can be bounded by the product of its projections, and it's equivalent to the entropy inequality in the last line, so that you have a sequence of random variables, and you take the joint distribution, and the entropy of that times n minus one is less than the summation of the entropies of the projections. And the question is, so can we extend such an inequality also to some sets? So if some sets, instead of some sets, we have now summation of random variables, so you take independent random variables. It's not true in general, we have counterexamples, but if it's plausible that if they are independent random variables, then this entropy inequality should hold. Another question which is still open is that if you have a non-commutative group, all the results we had depended on the commutativity of the operation. Kronecker type results only work for commutative groups commutative groups. Now, what if you have a non-commutative group? So do you still have, it's plausible that you still have a submultiplicativity property. In that case, you need to define the values ni as the maximum of that. So you take a sum set, and you in the middle you select the element for which the sum set is largest possible. And is it true that then that S is bounded above by the product of these numbers? Another question is whether we can improve the submultiplicativity if the sets are equal. It's very plausible that we have something like 3a squared is less than some constant times 2a to the cube, where the constant we think is something like 2 over 9, because the extremal case that we think is that when all the elements of the sum set are different, distinct. It's a very intriguing question. Okay, it's high time we solved it. Okay, thank you very much for that.